Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new and improved episode of Constructive Criticism. It's episode 132, and I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Manny Moraes.
Howdy!
How did you feel about that intro?
Loved it, except I wanted you to call me Rain Man.
So that's fair, but you realize that that's not the same intro I always get, right?
Oh my gosh, you're right.
It's the intro I used to give.
I mean, I didn't know that I liked it more, but now that you told me, now I like it less.
You liked it more, though.
I mean, my first instinct was yes, but now that I know things are different, I don't like it because I don't like change.
We'll talk about that during the shout-out segment. I'm also joined by my co-host, Michael Hinderrocker.
Hi, nice to be here again.
So, literally, I go on tilt every time somebody calls you Mike now.
Well,
you
and my mother
both. Not to call you that.
I believe I actually said that. My mother does not like that.
No, I asked you. I said, do you like Michael? And you said, nah, not really. Like, I prefer Michael.
I mean, yeah, okay. I probably do prefer Michael, but my college roommate always called me Mike, and one of my best friends growing up always called me Mike whenever we were out of earshot of my mother. So, it honestly, my preference for Michael is very slight.
Okay.
But it does exist.
Don't let it put you on tilt.
Well, welcome to the cast again, Mike. See, I'm on tilt. Don't forget to check out the sponsor of this podcast. You can check them out at OasisGamesSLC.com. You can get 15... Actually, I don't know that you can right now. Don't go to that website.
At the moment.
Yeah. MTGOasis.com, OasisCCG.com. Those are probably the best. Apparently, Crystal Commerce. Anti-shout out to Crystal Commerce, like, for always messing with Alex, but...
They're difficult. They always have things going on.
But yeah, shout out to Oasis. You can check them out, mtgoasis.com, oasisccg.com. If you just go to constructorcriticism.com... Hold on, actually. I want to make sure this link is directing to the right place.
All right, well, I'll talk about Oasis while you're doing that.
Yeah, what do you like about Oasis?
So I love that their inventory is, it seems almost infinite. If you look for almost any card there to build, you know, even fringe decks, you're almost surely going to find them.
Yeah.
They have fast shipping in addition to their, you know, their large card base, and their customer service is amazing. Really incredible.
Yeah, I love Oasis quite a bit. Check them out. If you just go to constructorcriticism.com, there is an Oasis Games button on that website. Just click it. It'll take you right to the site. Also, don't forget that you can become a patron of the show by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. It's a great way to support the podcast. It's the best way to support the podcast if you've already got all the magic cards you need. Otherwise, totally shop at Oasis because, first of all, that's just value anyway.
Yep.
And then, you know, supporting the podcast directly by doing that, it's going to be great, and it's very helpful for us. It puts money directly into our pockets. The podcast is now paid off, Spencer, so I am now paid off. The podcast has owed me money for a long time. I'm paid off, so all the money that's coming in, we can do different things with.
Yay.
So next up, we're going to buy all kinds of stuff. We have tokens coming out. We already have the art for two people done. You and Casey are done.
Sweet.
And, so we're not getting motorcycles?
We're not getting motorcycles. It's tokens and then I think a new computer.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to sigh, Michael. We may get lucky and buy like one of those little Razor mini bikes. That could be
in
the budget.
That's not happening.
It could be in the budget. I'm not saying it's not.
I am. As the owner, I'm saying
yeah,
it's
but I
not.
Mean, you only own 100% of the company. You know what I mean? There's some room to work.
But yeah, patreon.com/ccmtg. It's a great way to support us. It really does help. So, and we appreciate everybody that's doing it now. There's some great benefits. I know that Ryan K is a patron that supports us at $25 a month. He gets playtesting sessions. And he says his Magic game has really improved, and he's just become one of my friends through it. And
yeah, I agree. He's a really, really cool dude.
And it's great to see him grow as a Magic player. Today, he was like trying. Today, he asked me, he says, what are these blue, white, and blue, red decks that are like aggro but control? And like, he was like trying to learn. He's trying to learn all the time. And, you know, when it sounds bad that like I spend more time with him because he pays me, but like, I do.
Yeah. And I mean, well, actually, I talked to him about it. And the way he broke it down for me was the coolest thing. Was he said roughly, right? It's not a quote. But he contributes $25 a month, right? And he says, you know, if I were to go out and buy like a cup of coffee at Starbucks, it'd be like $6. So instead of, you know, paying that every week.
That's what he said to me too.
Yeah, he invests it into, you know, getting better at Magic. And he's like, it's a small price to pay to be able to play better, to have, you know, a higher level of testing partners and, you know, get your skill up. He says it's worth every penny.
Yeah, and I love Ryan. I love his attitude and yeah. It's great to like, and it's not just him. Like, there are people that do $10 a month. Oh, by the way, that reminds me. So we have gotten some questions about the Google Hangout this month, and we're probably either going to move it to next month or prolong it a little bit longer. So currently we're in a situation where we're changing hosts up. We have a meeting on Saturday this week. And so we'll have more information then. But as of the time that this podcast is coming out, there's not a plan to do the Google Hangout in April. For multiple reasons, like we're going to be improving the quality of the podcast and things like that, and the Patreon and the stuff that you get from it. So we want the Google Hangouts to reflect how good the podcast is. And I personally, as the person in charge, don't feel like they have been. And so I want to improve them for you. So for those reasons, we're going to delay it. But we are going to give out tokens to everyone who is a patron right now. Even if they didn't fall under that category. So if you're a patron of the show, you get the tokens even if you don't meet that threshold, because it's $3 just like the card of the week. But for those who have been with us since the beginning, we're just going to give you the tokens anyway because we love you.
Yep. We want to show our appreciation.
So let's see here. So that's how you can support the podcast. This podcast is about always improving, and hashtag always improving is this first segment of the show where we talk about how we got better at Magic. This week, I want to start with Manny. Manny, how did you improve at Magic, and why always improving? Why is that our statement?
So always improving is our attitude towards not even just Magic, just life. Like, if you want to listen to this, if you want to get better at Magic, listen to our podcast, learn and grow with us. We always want to get better at everything we do. We're those kind of people who are not happy unless we are getting better at things. It may be, I don't know, something wrong psychologically with us, but...
I don't know. I think...
it's just born into us.
I don't think that it's wrong. I think that the idea that, like... It's so funny because, like, today I tweeted about, like, my PPTQ finishes, uh-huh. And somebody tweeted at me, if you're not first, I think it was
Pat,
Roger.
No, it was Pat Uglow.
Was it Pat?
Yeah, I love him.
Pat is awesome. He also does the Leaving a Legacy podcast. Yeah. And he was like, if you're not first, you're last. And I was like, that's exactly how I'm feeling. But I think that it's not the same attitude of always improving. The idea of always improving is if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. But... getting better and improving is a steady thing, whereas if you're not first, you're last is like
all or nothing.
An absolute.
Yeah.
I think always improving versus if you're not first, you're last is the difference between being process-oriented and results-oriented. I mean, sure. Especially in Magic, realistically, you're just not going to win every week all the time.
Right.
That's a kind of goal that I think is ultimately unhealthy. But if you think about always getting better, always controlling what you can control, and playing the best Magic you can, regardless of outcome, that's something that even the best players in the world can still get better at.
So Manny, how did you improve at Magic this week?
This week, I took my defeat at the last local FNM-type tournament. I took it well. So I was playing Abzan tokens, and I did not do well. I was not prepared for the Humans deck that was... you know, just hitting the scene that weekend. And my Abzan tokens deck, while powerful, was ultimately too slow. It could not keep up with that deck's explosive starts. And I chose to put my pride aside and, you know, bypass it and move forward and grow and continue to find a deck that I view as playable and good and fits my play style. I think the biggest thing to take away here is not, you know, get mad at myself or try and waste time with Abzan tokens when it's not, it's something I believe is just not ever going to be fast enough. Michael, how did you get better at Magic this week?
I got better at Magic this week by playing what I feel is the best deck and figuring out how to win the mirror match. I went 3-0 in mirror matches en route to a PPTQ win this Saturday. And
oh, wait, you're not allowed on the podcast anymore.
Who did you play in the finals, Michael?
Spencer. I was very fortunate to beat him, by the way.
So first of all, I want to say that, like, the fact that you, like, came prepared for the mirror, and you beat people that were not prepared for the mirror, you're underselling yourself. You had one match where I did get a little unlucky, but that is not your entire tournament. Saying that like you were fortunate to win, it's selling yourself short.
I think you always have to be fortunate to win to some extent. I'm not saying I didn't play well, because I certainly felt that in the mirror I was at quite a large advantage. I think I only dropped one game out of seven, but I did feel that in the final I was fortunate.
Yeah. So it's hard for me because like I do think that I made one misplay against you. I did mulligan to five and then to six and then to six. So like I mulliganed four times in our three games. But I think that like the way my deck is built is it wants you to mulligan to the correct hands. So I don't know that it's as fortunate as you feel like it is.
I can't help it. When I win, I almost always feel like I've gotten lucky
in
some way.
You're overly humble, I know.
I don't mean that I think I'm bad at Magic. I just mean that there's enough variance that even if you play well, it's very hard to win a match, let alone a tournament, without a little bit of good luck. You have to not blow it then. You can't just play like a doofus, but you know, it doesn't.
I think I would give anything to hear you say I crushed that loser after a match.
I don't think I would have any friends if I started saying things like that. I mean, that's aggressive.
I think that like the importance is it was funny because there were actually two instances where I was talking to people playing Bant Company at the event, which is what Michael won the event with. And we were talking and one person said, "Oh, I don't know how Jim Davis won an event with his mana base." I was like, "Oh, are you not playing his updated mana base?" And he's like, "What are you talking about?" Ooh. And I was like, "Well, the event like started on Friday and he talked about his new mana base and they talked about it on coverage, which is what Michael was playing. And he was playing the Mirror Breaker, which was Eldrazi Displacer, which was Michael was playing, which the other guy was like, man, Eldrazi Displacer was really good in the mirror." And I'm like, this is information that was available to people. And Michael took advantage of that. He had the correct mana base, the correct things that Jim Davis was doing in the mirror that Jim Davis had already done. And those other people were like confused as to like, I don't know why that bothers me, but it's like this information is just readily available to you. And Michael took advantage of that and they didn't.
So one place I will give myself credit, I don't always believe I'm the best player in terms of actually figuring out what's going on in the game, making the best technical play, but I certainly will not lose for lack of preparation. I will never lose because I didn't try hard enough before the event began, and I think that in general that's by far the easiest way to give yourself an edge. I mean, outplaying people in a game with as much variance as Magic is very difficult and mostly comes down to not messing up over and over and over and over again and hoping they do. Giving yourself edges in deck building is almost always pretty simple. It doesn't require you to be a rocket scientist. Frequently, it just involves reviewing coverage. I mean, I wasn't even watching the Invitational when it was happening. I just went back and watched the match Jim Davis, and I think they showed another Bant Company player on camera playing a very similar list. But I just went back and reviewed those matches after they'd already happened and looked at what was going on.
I had a similar reason for improving this week at Magic. So, Manny's going to be really happy about this, and so is Ryan, but I got the fire back.
Got the fire. This has been an ongoing conversation with me. He's had with me for the last, like, 2 months? 3 months?
Longer than that, since Pro Tour Origins.
Yeah, and Manny, how do I get the fire back? Do this. No, that's not going to work.
It was pretty simple. It was actually just a conversation with Paulo. Like, I talked to Paulo, and he talked about, like, what he enjoys about Magic and, like, what he thrives for versus, like, what I'm thriving for. Mm-hmm. And I just want to crush him now.
You want to crush PV?
Yeah, I wanted to obliterate Paulo.
Sweet.
In a match of Magic.
That's a good goal.
I told him that. I was like, yeah. Well, now I just want to crush you.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I want in the world.
Right.
I want to crush you. I want to crush Kibler. I want to crush Finkel. I just want to turn you guys into meat and smash you. Like, and I haven't felt that way in a long time. And this week I felt that fire and it was such a weird feeling. I was like playing badly because of it almost. I was not in the zone. So if you guys haven't read Paulo's article, The Fire in the Zone, he talks about the difference between the two. And you should definitely read it.
So you almost were overeager.
Oh, I was so eager. And it was funny because Austin, he was like, man, he didn't use the word eager. He used the word excited. He's like, you got so excited like multiple times during this tournament. And then I could see it. And I'm like, I haven't been excited about Magic in so long that like getting that feeling, that adrenaline rush that you get from like like when you know you're gonna win, is
yeah.
That's is, interesting. I always find that like that kind of feeling helps me a lot during preparation, and actively hurts me horribly it does, when I'm playing.
So that's what Paulo talks about with the fire versus the zone, and like I was not in the zone. I was not playing my best Magic that day, but I had the fire and I had the want and I knew what I needed to do. It's just like execution was not entirely on my side. But man, it felt so good to like be excited for an 8-hour day of Magic, which I just have not been excited about in so long. And the thing is like, you might ask yourself, like, how does a conversation with one person do that? And it was my conversation with Paulo, and then it was like I discovered how to beat the decks that I thought were stupid. No, this is a real thing, because yeah. like it's like I present this question to our group of friends, right? How do I beat these decks? Don't play the deck you want to play. And it's like, that's not the right answer. Green-red historically has good matchup against aggro decks. I could beat aggro decks. How do I do it? And I didn't feel like anyone gave me the feedback that I wanted. So on Friday, when I had the flu, and I stayed home and I played so much Magic. And I constructed my deck in a way that was good against Blue-White Humans and Bant Company. And as Michael said on the car ride home, naturally good against Black-White. And what other decks would I want to beat going into a PPTQ?
You hit all the major players.
Yeah, and guess what? That's all I played against. And I did well, and it was such a good feeling that it was like Michael. It's like it felt good to be prepared for an event.
It's super validating when you've worked hard on something. I mean, this isn't just true in Magic. This is true in everything. Anything you work hard on, it's nice to see it kind of come to fruition, because it validates the idea that, like, okay, I'm not an idiot. I'm not crazy. This actually does work like I thought it did when I was trying, you know. When you're testing a deck and you spend a bunch of time working on matchups and you think you have it figured out, it's pretty sweet when then you actually show up to an event and it basically works out like you had hoped it would.
Yeah, I did think that I lost to one of my better matchups in the finals, and that sucked.
Well, I mean, to be fair, when you were testing, you weren't testing against me, so you didn't have my insane Ooh. Level of luck when it comes to drawing collected company, because there's one thing I'm good at,
from what
it's
I
drawing collected company.
From what I understand from your semifinals opponent, your luck is in drawing Sylvan Advocates.
I drew all 4-2 games in a row, so
wow.
It was pretty good.
That's hot.
It was not even that good. He could have drawn like any spell. His opponent was drawing like garbage.
Oh, okay.
Well, so this is my biggest issue. I mean, with that deck in particular, you're a deck that requires you to hit all your land drops. You're a deck that requires you to answer everything one for one, and you have way to draw cards.
Hold on. I want to be clear. You don't like Sorin either?
I do like Sorin.
I don't
like that black-white deck.
Okay.
Yeah, he spoke very highly of Sorin.
Who did?
Michael.
I did. I liked it better in Austin's deck, though. I liked Jace, it was pretty gross. It was pretty gross.
So that's how we all improve. So I improved by getting the fire back. Manny, you improved by giving up on bad ideas, yeah. Which, by the way, is a podcast.
Is
on
it?
On constructive criticism.
I feel like I'm growing up is what I'm doing.
You know what? It's so funny because I love you as a co-host. Like,
thank
a
you.
Lot.
Thank you.
And the reason is because I appreciate having somebody on the podcast that certain listeners can relate to. There's a subset of listeners that is improving with you.
Yeah.
And I think that that's important to have on the cast. I've talked to people about it. They're like, why do you like Manny so much on the cast? I'm like, it's invaluable. It's invaluable to have somebody on the cast that's getting better and like
yeah.
really trying to get better.
And I mean, as much as I play Magic, I don't have as much. I don't play as much as like a lot of the guys that were on the testing team, right? And it's one of those things where I have to learn my lessons when I can and where I can, just because I may play as much as some of our more casual listeners, where I'm still trying to improve at Magic, still trying to be competitive, but also still balance my life.
Yeah. So I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's move on to the next segment, which is this week we're going straight to the power rankings. This week we're going to do Modern. So we are not talking about the Modern results from the Open. The reason that we don't do that is because it's unfair to the statistics.
You mean the Invitational, correct?
The Invitational, thank you. So we're taking the classic numbers, and then what we're going to do is we're going to talk about them in the scope of like what people chose to take to the Invitational, rather than including the Invitational results into them, because like it doesn't help you learn anything to like So, like, random decks might top 8 the Invitational. I think there were two Abzan Company decks in the top 8. But Abzan Company actually didn't do that well outside of those two decks.
Well, and we've discussed how different the meta is in an IQ.
It is.
It's also just that, I mean, you can carry a poor performance in one format. If you 8-0 standard, you don't really need to do much of anything in Modern. You basically just have to not absolutely crash and burn.
Exactly. So, with that being said, we have a three-way tie coming in third through fifth, and one of them actually is Abzan Company. So Abzan Company comes in with these tied points. I had a thought today. I was working, or it was actually during my first break. Is that why is Pod banned if Pod is just one of the best five decks anyway?
I don't know. I can't answer that.
And then
that question.
On coverage, they were like, well, you know, we're just glad that Pod's banned because then this deck can exist. And
so
like,
then we can reprint second Pod.
Well, it's like, dude, just give us Pod back. I don't understand. I don't understand like why it needs to be banned.
It kind of seems along with the trend of banning something like Splinter Twin, right? Where players who have been
playing, they shouldn't have banned it?
No, I agree. They should not have banned either of those decks. But players who have been playing them for so long are rewarded so highly by knowing the ins and outs of their decks. A lot of players just get so good, they feel unbeatable.
The problem is that you have a format that's ostensibly an eternal format that's not being treated like an eternal format. I mean, they're treating it like a Pro Tour format. Yeah, and if you want it to be a Pro Tour format, then don't call it an eternal format.
Yeah, that's my thoughts too. I would just say take it off the Pro Tour. Give us Pod back. Give us Green Sun back. Give us Jace the Mind Sculptor. Give us Blood Raid Elf. Like, and stop with these shenanigans. Like, Collected Company is a sweet card, but when I did the power rankings, there were three different Collected Company decks.
Sure. Well, I mean, and I get it to some extent.
If the reason that you banned Pod was to make it so three different Collected Company decks could exist, I will accept that as a reason.
But that's not the reason. I mean, the reason for pretty much every banning in modern history
is because of Winners.
At least the last couple of years, well, Winners and the Pro Tour, just so you can have a newer metagames that coverage isn't less interesting to more casual viewers.
It just seems so detrimental. Like,
it's the same deck, dude. It's the same deck with four Collected Companies, four Court of Callings instead.
Yeah, I don't care for it.
I mean, luckily,
it can still kill you through value or combo. It doesn't changes.
The thing is that the only difference is that you don't get to play like cool spells. Like you have to play a different game, and I don't even know that it's better. It's like,
it seems so similar already. I mean,
I would say it's different, except it's actually just not different.
It's so close to the other list too. It's same old song and dance, really.
So what are your thoughts on that? I think the deck is good.
Yeah, no, I do too.
It's so funny because like back in the day when this deck debuted, we were like, oh, it's bad Pod, but like bad Pod's still good.
Right.
Especially when Twin is no longer a thing, right? I mean, if you take away one of your kind of main predators, and that I would assume this deck doesn't interact especially well with Twin.
I think that like Abzan Company is just a good deck, and like Eternal Witness is just a sweet magic card, and like it does the things that we were doing with Jason stuff only better, right? They just get to buy it back right away. And
sure, well, I mean, Eternal Witness in particular also interacts really well with Collected Company. I mean, maybe even to a greater extent than Birthing Pod interacts with Eternal Witness.
Yeah,
I mean, being able to like get something and get it back immediately.
Yeah, exactly. Right? I agree. Like the deck is still sweet. The deck is just the same deck as Pod was. So I just don't understand why we can't have Pod. That being said, I'm not sure, like, just like with Pod, I don't know where the deck actually sits in the format. It feels like you're rewarded for knowing your deck with this deck just like you are with Pod.
One of my understandings of this Abzan Company deck in particular is that it matched up very well against Eldrazi. So I know that it had seen a lot of play and a lot of success during the last few months for people who were too stubborn to play Eldrazi.
Yeah, it didn't make that jump for us. Like, people were saying it had a very good matchup, but it like still was being outperformed by things like Grixis and regular Abzan and Infect and Burn and stuff during that time frame. Like, as far as the power rankings are concerned, Eldrazi is gone and this deck is staying in this. It's staying here. It's interesting because like when people were playing it during the Eldrazi, I was like, does it actually have a good matchup? But I actually think that the deck might just be good And people realized it more because Eldrazi was a deck.
So you think maybe it had to do more with Twin being gone than with Eldrazi?
No, I think that the deck might have always been good, and we just were all haters on it because it wasn't Pod.
Right. I think what Spencer's trying to say is that with Eldrazi, let's say in, you know, a much nicer, happier place to live, Eldrazi never existed, right? This deck...
we might not ever have noticed.
Right, yeah. This deck could stand on its own two legs, and we just never knew. We took it for granted.
Because it wasn't Pod.
Right.
Just like I'm doing now, right?
Sure. That's a, it's that's, not Pod. I mean, that is a fair criticism. It is, by definition, not birthing Pod.
Coming in with... we'll just use Jund next. Jund comes in with 5 points also. Honestly, I'm not surprised that a Kolaghan's Command deck is up here this week. I'm actually surprised it's not higher. I'm surprised that people even played Abzan in the last couple weeks. I think that the amount of Thopter Foundry, the amount of Affinity, the amount of... in fact, like, I think that Kolaghan's Command is at an all-time high. And it's also tied with Grixis. Both of these decks come in with 5 points, and I think that, like, this is the better place to be than Abzan, which people played a lot this week.
I agree. I think that probably part of that reason is because Jund is a little bit more difficult to build. When you're looking at a Jund deck, you're looking at around $2,000, maybe even a little more.
Than Grixis?
No, I just total, in its total
cost. Oh, then Abzan.
Right, yeah. Abzan seems a lot cheaper to put together.
It is. And the thing is like, as somebody who had their first PTQ top 8, I've had actually... all but one of my PTQ top 8s before PTQs disappeared. All of them were with Jund, except for one.
I'm surprised you don't get like the word Jund tattooed on your lower back.
Actually, Kyle Falbo was a co-host on episode 1 of this podcast. He told me to get the fire back. All I needed to do was brew a Jund deck, because he teases me about Jund all the time.
Yeah, I mean, you love it. You love Jund and Rug so much.
I think that, like, my love for, like...
green-red?
Green-red X, but I think that my... I actually think my love for blue-red is higher than my love for green-red, but blue-red is never good and green-red is usually good.
Right.
So it's kind of like... like, that blue-red control deck looks so sweet.
I think blue-red's very powerful a lot of the time.
But, anyway, the point is like... I would play this Grixis deck. You could not, I would do it. And the reason that these decks are good is because you have no bad cards.
No.
And it's so funny because people are like, well, what if you draw the wrong card of your deck in certain matchups? And
well, none of your deck is that bad,
yeah,
right?
The thing is none of your deck is that bad. And you can construct your Jund deck and your Grixis deck to like have non-dead cards.
Well, probably require more metagaming than some more linear decks, right?
They do. I mean, they do, because
you build Affinity or Scapeshift or whatever. Yeah. You only have so many slots to play with.
Yeah, you have flex slots, right?
Right.
Whereas the flex slot, like, let's be honest here. Dark Confidant is a flex slot in Jund. Like, that's... Liliana is a flex slot in Jund. Like, your best cards are, like, cards that you can play with. You don't have to play Dark Confidant. Yeah. Sure. And that's a big deal. And I think that the Grixis is the same way, where like you can play a version where you're casting Thought Scour, targeting yourself, you know, to mill yourself to play things like Gurmag Angler, or you can play a different version. Like there's like these two decks specifically, they are control decks. And they're doing it in this mid-range control way, kind of like if you were to think about it, these decks are closer to Abzan control than they were to Jund mid-range of Alara. And that's an important differential. Like, it's they're control decks, but in the right matchups, like, they get to play a tempo game against the other control decks, like maybe a blue-white control, a blue-white-red control deck, and that's a big deal.
I would also think that compared to a lot of more linear decks, these also give you more space for the metagaming that the pilot does to pay off in a positive way, and it also allows for your ability to correctly evaluate and play matchups to matter more, where you're just going to have a lot less matchups that are completely lopsided in one direction.
Oh yeah,
so when you see these decks doing consistently well in the hands of, I mean, frequently the same players over and over again, there's a reason for that.
Yep.
It's because they're putting in the time week in, week out to change their decks slightly to improve matchups that they perceive to be more important this week. And then when they get to those matchups, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, and that's like a huge deal when you think about things like this last week, somebody took second with Goblin Dark Dwellers in their Jund deck.
Pardon me?
Yeah, Goblin. I mean, it's seeing tons of modern play.
Really?
Yeah, I think that it's wrong, but people are doing it.
But that's
yeah,
but
that's you're excited. I see that look on your face.
But that's what's interesting about Jund versus, you know, Affinity, right? I mean, you probably can't like
you couldn't
just
ever
start
do that
slotting things into Affinity and having it pay off for you. Whereas, you know, if he's wrong, he's playing one.
It's
so.
I remember there was a PTQ season where everybody was like, it was right after Bloodbraid Elf got banned, and everybody was like, all right, well, we're all playing a Falkenwrath Aristocrat or Falkenwrath. Whatever the 4-1 flyer
is. That is Falkenwrath Aristocrat.
Okay. And I was like, no, I'm playing Huntmaster of the Fells. Like, I'm not messing around with that. And, like, it was a long time later that Manny was trying to figure out how to play his Jund deck. And I'm like, you need to play Chandra, Huntmaster of the Fells, more Tastures. Like, you were doing something else.
There's so many options.
But you were doing something else.
I think I went up a Tasigur, which... And
no,
went,
it wasn't that.
Put in Olivia, main deck.
Something... Was it Olivia?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was Olivia's. People were doing that for a while. That was all bad. It was two Olivias. You were playing two Olivias.
I mean, I don't know. I'd rather play Olivia over Huntmaster.
No.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Yeah, especially with Lingering Souls, you can't beat that card.
What?
Lingering Souls.
Why does that matter? Why does Olivia help you there? Because it shoots them down?
Yeah. Pew, pew.
Slowly.
So what do you, so this is the debate, though. What would you guys play, Grixis or Jund?
I personally would play Grixis. I like being able to interact with my opponent with counterspells.
I think I would rather play Jund based on... I just like the cards better. And honestly, if you have two good decks, I think playing the one you think is cooler is as good a reason as any.
Yeah, I think... I mean, when you look at just the 7-1 decks, there was a Jund deck that 7-1'd at the Invitational... I don't believe there was a Grixis deck. I think that Jund has the benefit of like having great minds tuning it and doing things with it for years. And Grixis doesn't have that.
Yeah, I was just going to chime in. Whenever I look up articles about Jund, they're always done by really great players like LSV.
It's like Reed Duke,
yeah,
right?
Reed Duke who invented Chandra Pyromaster Jund.
Yeah, these...
And, like, he took second and first at 2 GPs in a row in Modern with that deck. Like,
right, yeah, these world-class players love these decks, and they're practically their babies.
To be fair, like, Jerry Thompson
That's what I was going to say. Jerry's probably the guy I associate most closely with Grixis.
Yeah, and Patrick Chapin, like, they were pushing for Grixis control. So there's definitely players on both sides of this issue.
Sure, sure.
But ultimately, when you get great players on both sides, doesn't that just tell you that I mean, although they're slightly different,
something...
you can just play what you want.
Yeah,
and that's where you want to be, right? If you get to play a deck that you like and is good, you're going to have fun no matter what.
Yeah, I think that Grixis and Jund shows that issue of like playing the deck you know in Modern is important, and I think that deck does it. These decks do that. So, what comes in next? We have Scapeshift.
Scapeshift.
Manny, what is Scapeshift?
I believe it's your first or second favorite deck of all time.
It's pretty high up there.
It's really high up there.
I mean, Rug Scapeshift is my baby.
Yeah, I've heard you ask yourself, should I sell this deck? And then you think about it for maybe 4 seconds, and you're like, I'll never do that. I'm pretty sure...
When I saw Scapeshifts, we're like, I don't even know how much they are. They're probably so much money.
I don't even want to look.
So what you're saying is you resisted temptation.
I mean,
he bought the deck for relatively cheap at the time.
I mean, I bought it for like $850.
Yeah, that's. I mean, if you sold it now, you'd at least double your money.
No.
Yeah. Selling Magic cards is pretty hard.
It is.
Yeah, people are insane when it comes to buying Magic cards from people. They're like, no, I'm going to pay.
I'll give you 40% of what that's worth.
So Scapeshifts are currently like $50.
Jeez.
And I think I bought them for 15.
Yeah, I think maybe 15 or 16, you said.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
But I love Scapeshift. Here's the thing, is people associate me with like, you like green cards, and it's like, I like specific things. I like playing green in my controlling decks. I like being the control deck against aggro. It was funny because like Austin was watching me against blue-white humans, and he's like, I could play your green-red ramp deck. That deck looks fun. Yeah. I'm like, Austin, I just bored into green-red control against aggro. Like, that's why you like it.
Yeah.
It's just green-red control. But it's also how I board against, like, every deck. I just board into the controlling deck in every matchup except control, which I board into the aggro deck.
True. Yeah, because
in every deck I play, mm-hmm. that's just how I like to play Magic. And Scapeshift does this beautiful thing where it's...
Does both. It's the most frustrating thing in the whole world.
No, it's just a control deck. Everybody calls it a combo deck, and that's just ludicrous. The green-red version is a combo deck. The rug version, the good version, that is just straight control.
Well, so every time I see you pilot it, the impression it gives me is that it is a control deck with a combo as a win condition.
Yep, exactly.
Like, you're not ever in a hurry to do it. Sometimes you are, but
it's more reminiscent of Twin than Ad Nauseam.
Right. You're under pressure, and that's your way out.
It's certainly not a Jund deck, right? It's like people call it like a mid-range deck, a combo deck, a control deck, and they have a hard time identifying what these are. Back in the day, I think that ramp usually gets put under the wrong category. Ramp is typically either a mid-range deck or a control deck. Or a combo deck. Like, they call them all these things. But like, when you look back through history, if you think about like Wolf Run Ramp, that deck was a control deck. In fact, it was the best control deck in that format. And people didn't realize that. People didn't realize that they were playing against a control deck, so they played wrong because they thought they were playing against a ramp deck. But like, ramp is a strategy to gain. So basically, the idea of ramp is that you're gaining a mana advantage. Where does mana advantage matter the most? It matters in the control mirror.
Right. I think what makes me think of your Rug Scapeshift deck as a control deck is the fact that you're casting Cryptic Commands like it's nothing. And I mean, I think that's just not something you see all the time, right?
Yeah.
For me, the simplest way to identify a mid-range deck is looking at how a deck pivots in different situations and matchups.
Yeah, so, which ramp decks don't do. They have...
So I have a hard time calling ramp a mid-range deck for that reason, because ramp is very linear. Your games generally look about the same, whereas I think when you're playing...
So would you call it a linear control deck?
It's hard to say what I would call this, like the ramp in this standard format. But yes, it's a control deck with a better control mirror matchup and probably a worse...
Not mid-range.
Aggressive matchup.
Aggressive matchup, sure.
So you probably are slightly better against mid-range and in the control mirror. You're quite a heavy favorite. And then for that privilege, you give up some percentage against the aggressive deck.
And then you just have this sweet sideboard.
Well,
You're living the dream here for me, Mike.
but when I think about mid-range, thinking about Jund and Grixis, right? The idea is that if you're playing against someone with a lot of large casting cost spells, a lot of counter spells, a lot of just removal, you end up playing sort of the aggressive role in that matchup. And if you're playing against Zoo or Burn or something like that, you end up being the control deck, basically.
So what do you guys like better? Do you guys like the rug version of Scapeshift or the cheap green-red version that a lot of people play?
Cheap.
No, it's actually just cheap. Like I'm not saying cheap as like an insult. I'm saying cheap as in like the cost of deck is really inexpensive.
Yeah. I prefer the rug one. I think it is just going to reward you for being a better player, having access to those blue cards.
See, Manny, now that's why I prefer the red-green one.
Slam it.
As someone with little confidence in my ability to play Scapeshift correctly, given that I haven't really tried to play it very much, if I had to play an event tomorrow, hand me the green-red one, because there's less I can do to make it bad.
Seven lands. That's just what you got to remember. Seven lands.
I can count that high.
That actually has Prismatic Omen, so you don't need seven lands.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so with Prismatic Omens, your Volokuts become mountains.
Oh, nice.
So you put four Volokuts and two mountains in a play.
So you only need six.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, man, I can definitely count that high.
It's actually it's six times four, right?
It's 24.
It's six times four times four.
That's a lot of damage.
Yeah. that's one of the reasons also is because with the other deck, like the control, like you have to manage their life total. Mm-hmm. With the reg version and with like the Prismatic Omen versions, even the one that won the event actually had Prismatic Omens. The reason to do that is because you can beat them at different life totals than you could if you didn't have Prismatic Omens in your deck.
Sure.
So what you're saying is on Magic Online, you can beat Abzan Company even after it's gained ostensibly infinite life.
No, you cannot beat them after they gained that much. I mean, it depends on Magic Online how much life they want to gain. But I think that Scapeshift like has gained a lot in this format as people are trying to dirtle around with like Thopter Sword, and I think that Scapeshift has always been great, and I think that we will continue to see Volokit decks doing well. Coming in at number one, though, we have Infect, blue-green Infect. I don't know that this is actually the best deck in the format. I think that part of it has to do with like people trying to figure out how to use these Thopter Sword decks, how to beat different decks, and like Infect gets to be the combo deck that like punishes them for that.
Yeah, I think Infect is one of those decks where we just see it, right? It's an ebb and flow with that deck. People don't know what they're doing. It crushes them. Once they realize that they have to play Infect, they beat it.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's also a deck that highly rewards experience with Infect because it's a shockingly difficult deck to play.
That's true.
I mean, you see, it's another one of these decks where you just see the same guys mm-hmm. week in, week out. If they're playing Modern and they're playing Infect, they manage
Tom
to
Ross
do well
is with a is a anomaly, right? He's not a real human.
You watch and it's like, well, no one else is winning with this deck right now. Oh, Tom Ross just won an event with it for the, you know,
17th time in a row. Yeah.
Right.
And he is so good with that. And I think that it shows you that, I mean, with a lot of decks, and this is true probably in most formats, but especially in Modern, if you really put the time into learning a deck and playing it not just well, but near perfectly, you get paid off for that almost no matter what the deck is.
Man, I love Scapeshift.
another thing with Infect is I believe once you know how to play it effectively, you're much less likely to lose to it. I've done a fair amount of testing against it, and you know, in certain situations, you can create 2-for-1s a lot of the day with the nature of how the deck works, with it needing pump spells to make its creatures anything.
So how did these rankings for you guys compare to like what you guys saw at the Invitational and what you guys expect to see at those kind of events? Or even at like your Modern event at like a PPTQ?
I mean, there's a lot more variance, I think, in, you know, your local scene. Like, you see Affinity quite a bit. It's one of those.
The honorable mentions were Fish, so Merfolk, Affinity, and Vandry. And these might actually just be the best 8 decks.
Yeah, I think we're pretty close to the mark.
Yeah, I think that, like, Burn and Green Red Aggro and Zoo, like, are probably somewhere in there, too.
Yeah, I think
And I think that because of the new format, those decks got split up and didn't get as many points.
Right, and I think people are wanting to make Blue-White X, you know, they want to make it happen. They want to make Fetch happen. And I think, you know, with enough time and enough testing, it may be a thing.
My takeaway watching the Invitational this weekend was that compared to the power rankings, obviously, don't include the Invitational. Very, very aggressive decks such as Burn, Zoo, kind of decks in that style were very successful. And I would imagine it's largely because without Eldrazi, people are either going back to decks that they feel are now good that weren't before, or just playing things that are a little bit slower, trying to play Ancestral Visions. And it looked to me like you do not want to be playing against Zoo when you're trying to play Ancestral Visions.
Yeah, with how high I was on Green Red Aggro, probably, I want to say, like 6 months ago, before the Eldrazi Menace, that deck was so fast, so powerful, and if you weren't prepared for it, it was going to steamroll you.
I was just going to ask, what deck would you guys play in Modern, and why?
I would play Green Red Aggro.
Why?
I think it rewards tight play, and, you know, if your opponent is doing anything moderately slow, you're going to kill them.
What about you?
I think I would play Zoo this week. Just watching it on camera, it looked very difficult to interact with profitably. It looked like it had a lot of the same stuff. I mean, obviously, that Burn has going on, but a little more resilience in games that get drawn out.
I would play Rogue Scapeshift. I think that it's the best control deck in Modern.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly.
And I love playing me some control decks that are favored against other control decks. So that's what I would play. Well, we're going to come back after the break and talk to you guys about the value of thinking. So we'll be right back. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. So we're going to go into our training grounds. Every week on this podcast, we talk about something that makes you better at Magic or better at life in general. And this week, we're going to talk about the value of thinking. You would think that this is a pretty simple topic. You would think that, like, you just think, right? Like, you just, that's valuable. If you do something, like, you should think about it. But I think that a lot of Magic, and even getting good at Magic, you learn how to take shortcuts and things like that. And part of that makes it so you think less. And that's also valuable. So there's a fine line between like at what's actually a shortcut and then just playing badly. So we kind of want to talk about that. I want to talk about we're going to just call the guy Wendell. So Wendell is a player. He plays Control. And Wendell plays Control a lot. So in Modern, Wendell's playing Grixis Delver. And Wendell is doing weird stuff. The thing is like, oh, is Wendell is forget is just drawing Delver's secrets and not playing them, pretending that they're counter spells. Wendell also does this in Limited, where he'll have spells that he can cast and just not cast them. So Wendell's doing stuff, right? He's playing his game the specific way he wants, and it's the shortcuts that he's learned throughout a time he's played in Magic, right? Right, Casey? Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
I called you lots of names right there.
Yes, that is exactly right, but then I'm not Casey.
Yeah, I mean, I said Manny at the end.
So yes, he's playing.
It
he's
was
kind
a
of
shortcut.
On, yeah, he's
that was definitely not a shortcut.
He's kind
I just
of
call
on,
you a random name. You answer to it, man.
Yeah, it's like that game where you call somebody a girl's name all day. Just
I don't know what is that curses?
What
I don't know.
No, I don't
anyway,
know.
so how does this happen? How does it happen to the point where like a relatively good Magic player can decide that it's more important to leave up a fake counterspell that's not in their deck than to play a spell in their hand that could help them win the game faster?
I think people just get set in their ways. They're used to doing things a certain way, just like you're used to taking a certain way to work, right? When you have a detour, you almost have to think about how you're going to get to work, even though it should be, you know, relatively simple to figure that out.
Yeah, one of the things that happened, Michael, you and I were actually watching Wendell play a Limited game where he literally was not playing three drops in his hand with like 11 mana.
Yeah, I think he was holding up an end-of-turn draw spell, but he could have main-phased it to hit a land drop that he needed to hit.
Oh, he
I
did
think.
That too. That
it,
also
it
happened.
Was interesting.
But, like, the thing is like, in this Wendell guy, like, it's something that you have this learned behavior, and it can happen a lot in Constructed, where you want to do everything at the last second possible, because it gives you the most chances for your opponents to make a play where you get to take advantage of their play.
Well, I think when you're bad... You just play everything as soon as you can play it, right?
Right. Because
you don't understand how things interact. You don't understand interactions. And as you learn to play Magic better, you realize, oh, okay, well, I want to be responding to what my opponent is doing when possible. And then...
Because it gives you the... It sure, puts you in the driver's seat.
But obviously, that's not true in every case, and sometimes it doesn't matter. And the trick here is figuring out... sort of what percentage are they to have a response that I care about versus what value am I giving up by waiting?
Yeah, so it was funny because I was talking to Matt Kling and I was like, Wendell was playing some interesting Magic where he was not playing his Delvers, and Matt didn't believe me. Matt then watched the Wendell play a match with the Delver deck and goes, oh my gosh, he held his Delver for like six turns. What was he doing?
I also didn't believe you when you told me that that was happening.
Yeah, he just does it. And the thing is it's like... It's just wrong. Like, not adding power to the board to, like, increase your clock in a deck that needs a clock, like, is incorrect 100% of the time.
Well, and, I mean, it's not always incorrect to do that, but in a certain style of deck, right? Like, we're talking about Grixis Delver. It's a tempo deck. You're trying to get down, get on the board, and, you know, put your opponent off of their game plan.
Well... There are always corner cases, right? I mean, there,
sure,
there
sure.
are always corner cases.
Yeah, there's going to be some situation where you should hold your Delver and pretend
right,
it's something
but
else.
But generally...
But yeah, let's talk about 90% of the time, right? Is that's what you're trying to do with Delver. And if you're not doing that, then you're not playing the deck the way it was meant to be played.
I think that like, what's important here is, like, what's the reason that you're doing that? What's the reason that Delver's in your hand? I wanted to pretend to have a different card. It's not really that good of a reason. Like, if you want to pretend to have a different card for a specific reason, to have it be a card that your opponent could think that you have because of a situation you ran into in another game, like, there's a corner case where that's correct.
But that's obviously not the norm. And if you're frequently finding yourself holding spells up and later realizing that you would, you know, oh, I wish I had played that creature, or I wish I'd played that spell differently, you know, if you need a mana source and you hold up your draw spell until end of turn and then you untap and draw and, you know, but you got the mana source you were looking for from the draw spell, I mean, obviously it would have been better to have it in play. So I think it's easy to get locked into those lines and patterns of thinking where just because something is frequently correct in one deck or format, that doesn't necessarily make it carry over to every deck or every format you're playing.
Yeah, and there's... This is just, like, we're taking Wendell and we're, like, making this into an issue, right? We're talking about like a specific thing, but it's something that we can relate to. And the thing is like, there's something to be thought about all the time in Magic. You know, whether it's playing your Delvers, playing not playing your three drops in Limited, there's something that you're doing that you need to be thinking about why you're doing it. You know, some people will just refuse to attack. They're playing around things that don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, if I attack and he has...
I think these are really common right now in both Standard and Limited. And I think the best examples in Limited are probably Werewolves. When do you not cast a spell on your own turn to flip your Werewolf? Where does the value proposition have to be for that to be smart? And what are your chances of getting screwed when your opponent just untaps, casts two spells, and flips it back? Mm-hmm. And then in Standard, I was seeing this a lot yesterday with people not attacking into five mana because they're scared of Archangel Avacyn.
Right.
But sort of under, you have to think about it a little bit and say, so if they have an Archangel Avacyn, right,
mm-hmm.
is this something I can beat? If they do this, what happens? How can I play around it? How can I build my deck to be better in this situation if this is something that I'm not comfortable doing?
Right.
Absolutely.
And at some point, if you're so fearful of Avacyn, you're giving them more draw steps to draw it. And it just ends up being much worse for you in the long run.
And it's situational, right? At the same time, yeah. I'm not saying if Avacyn is going to blow you out, you have no way to deal with it, then mm-hmm. don't swing into five open mana
sure.
if you aren't forced into it. But sometimes you have to understand that just because a card is bad for you, maybe you just can't beat that card whether you play around it or not, right?
Right.
So if you're taking... The ultimate goal is to win, not to make a decision that ends up being correct. The ultimate goal is to win. And if you're taking percentage points away from yourself in order to play around something you can't beat anyways, right? If you're not going to be able to beat Avacyn next turn or the turn after that or the turn after that, it's best to just attack and hope they don't have it.
Right. If you have no outs to Avacyn in your deck, then what are you really doing? You're just prolonging the inevitable.
Well, or even if you do, you might say, okay, well, I need to... I had this come up a couple of times yesterday uh-huh. playing Banned Company. So I have, after boarding, three Ojutai's commands in my deck. I uh-huh. haven't seen one yet. You know, there are a couple of cards that I know what they are on the bottom from a Collected Company. So I might say... Well, if he has Avacyn, I am going to die if I attack here. That's
we're getting a little ahead.
Oh. Okay.
No, it's okay. This is good things to like. They're like you're giving a thought process that's like important.
So what I'm trying to illustrate is that you need to at some point not just kind of gut feel, but say just do some. They can be really rough, but do some sort of calculations in your head. So if I attack and he doesn't have Avacyn, is he just dead on board?
Yeah.
Right? If he's dead on board and I don't have very good ways to play around it, I'm probably just going to jam and hope it's good.
Mm-hmm.
If I have an Ojutai's Command in my hand, but I don't have four open mana this turn for whatever reason, maybe I'll say, okay, I'll wait until next turn. But where it gets fuzzier is if you say, okay, well, I'm not guaranteed to win if he doesn't have it. There are Ojutai's Commands in my deck. I could draw it. So when you start getting into the last
calculated kind of decisions. Clear-cut
situations...
You're making calculated decisions.
Right, where you need to actually spend a little time thinking about basically statistics.
This is something that I notice in Counterspell Wars a lot, where even I make this mistake, where like you're either fighting over a fight that doesn't deserve to be fought, like you're just, oh, I'll counter that. And oftentimes, I'll put myself, my opponent, in that situation where it's like, I have two Counterspells in my hand, and it's like, well, I don't really need to get into a counter war with this deck. But if I can create one, I can make my opponent use two spells to stop this one counterspell. And that creates, like, this interaction. Like, why are they doing it? Like, is this spell that important to them? Like, does it actually impact the game? And, like, even me, I know that, like, sometimes I'll just let spells resolve without even looking at my hand or, like, what I could do. And that's, like, a mental lapse that I have.
Sure. I did that yesterday. I did not Ojutai's Command a Reflector Mage that just about killed me because I just said okay without thinking.
Yeah. I think really that's great. An easy mistake to make. So what kind of things do we think about throughout a game of Magic? For me, it's like, how do I represent things with my lands? How do I represent the most things at all times? And then sequencing is also something I try and consider. Like, if I cast this spell first into this spell, like, how does that impact the game? I actually had a sequencing error against Michael in the finals of that PPTQ that could have cost me the game that we were debating at the end of the day. Sequencing is something that I consider very important. Lands is something that I consider very important. You know, there's just so many things that are going on in a game of Magic that, like, it's hard to think of everything. And that's why those shortcuts exist. But, like, the value of thinking about things when you have the time to think about them is so important. And those are the things that I prioritize right now. Manny, it says here that you're looking at a board and evaluating the game as it's in progress all the time.
Yes. So what I mainly try to do is take the long way around in regards to these shortcuts, because I know if I, you know, put myself on autopilot and I do what I always do, I can end up misplaying very easily. So I try and stop. I try to evaluate the board state as much as I can, think about everything that could be happening, the amount of cards in my opponent's hand, what lands they have open, if they have man lands, what their creatures are doing, what their creatures' abilities are, the power and toughness, almost pre-combat math. I try and think about these things all as much as I can, as often as I can, so that I don't just say okay and ship the game away.
Yeah. Michael, what are the things that you try and think about? It says here, the big picture, like what lines are actually available to you is something that you have been trying to do. And you said that that came from my story about me playing against
Shahar Shenhar.
So Spencer told this really interesting story about Shahar, playing against Shahar, where I think Shahar had a Jace Architect of Thought activation, that's sort of immaterial to the story. Basically, he chose to take the same card without a win condition over the card with a win condition, because he had decided that at that point in the game, having the win condition in his hand actually made him less likely to be able to win, that it was more likely to be taken out of his hand or countered or whatever. And then he was able to, over the course of the game, keep track of exactly where it was in his deck and make decisions based on that. I mean, now obviously, that's pretty difficult to do, and for a lot of us, if we start trying to do things at that level from scratch, we're just, you know, going to be so focused on that, we're either going to have a stroke or forget to attack or something like that.
But, or forget to attack.
Sure, right? You know, oh, where's this card in my deck? Oh, I forgot to cast End of Turn Collected Company. Oops. But I think the point still stands that when you're looking at people who play Magic at a really high level, they're able to make decisions based on more information than we likely are. So one of the things I like to do when I'm playing and when I'm weighing my options is to think a little bit about what cards I've seen out of their deck, what cards I would expect to see out of their deck. So, you know, if I'm playing against Bank Company, have I seen an Archangel Avacyn yet? Is it possible they would have sided them out for some reason? Is it possible that they have one and are slow rolling it? Is it possible they just don't have one? You know, think through what they've represented, think through their lines in this game, and then just make the best decision you can and live with it without being too results oriented.
So what kind of things do you find yourself forgetting to think about? Michael, for you, we put down lands.
Well, yesterday I racked up two game rules violations that were both, neither had any impact on the game. They were
just stupid.
They were just not thinking for a couple of seconds. I played an extra land as I was conceding a game and got a game rules violation for that. And I tapped a land for a color of mana it didn't make when I had like 15 lands in play. I wasn't holding anything up. I wasn't trying to represent anything. I just stopped paying attention. I think I tapped a plains for green mana.
It was a plains and a forest for Jace, right?
Sure. Yeah, that is what it was. I was thinking an island and a plains for a Sylvan Advocate, but yeah, same idea. And you know, it wasn't malicious. There was nothing I was trying to do. I don't think it made any difference in either case. It's just stupidity.
But I think that, Manny, this is something you can relate to. It's just paying attention to how you're tapping your mana or what you're doing with your mana.
Yeah, it definitely is. So when I very first joined the podcast, I had a huge problem with tapping mana incorrectly. I would just tap it. I was, oh, this should be enough. Here we go. And not think of, you know, the consequences, what I needed to play afterwards. And I mean, it's still something that I will have a problem with if I don't pay attention to it.
We're going to get to that.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Well, this is called foreshadowing.
Oh, okay.
But I think a lot of that is pretty easily, you just have to be methodical and slow down a little bit sometimes, because
you do.
I think especially when time starts to run down in a match, you know, if you're in a game three and you really can't afford a draw, you're sitting there just trying to play fast, and sometimes just take a step back and realize, okay, it takes me like 1 second to make sure I grab the correct land to cast my Jace with.
Yeah.
Manny, or to make sure I leave up the right mana so I represent that I could have a Dromoka's Command or could have a Bounding Krasis rather than tapping in a way that only leaves me with green mana.
Right.
Manny, you put here that one of your things that you forget to do is prioritizing threats.
Yes. So oftentimes, you know, we're faced in the middle of a game with a difficult decision. Let's say, well, this is going to be Narset comes down, right?
Wow, what a bad player.
I don't know.
I think the Narset rule is never attack it.
Yeah, that card's just bad. Don't worry about it.
It's just on infinite.
Sure, sure. So let's say someone is in the state of mind where they want to attack it, right? Where they think that they can get somehow killing this Narset's big butt is going to help them advance their game plan. I mean, sometimes it's not so easy. It's not so black and white, right? Maybe Jace flips and down ticks, but your opponent only has six life, and you have maybe a 3-3 in play.
I've actually watched you miss lethal attacking a planeswalker instead of the player.
Yeah, I have done that before, and learning from those mistakes is crucial. And
so, how do you combat that? How do you force yourself to is that why the thing that you're thinking about is always evaluating the board?
Yes, exactly. So that's part of the problem. So I think being aware in the state of your game and where it's at is very, very important, and also having a little after action report with your friends. Because, you had that conversation with me where, you'd tell me he's dead on board. And I go, oh, you don't say. And then, you think about that the next time you play and you go, all right, well, let's take into account their life total before we just start sending things sideways.
Well, and I think generally those are the kinds of things that just practice and being careful will help you avoid. Mm-hmm. Because in those kinds of cases, it's pretty cut and dry as to what is right and what is wrong. Right. If you have lethal on board and you're not attacking the player, you are just wrong.
Where I'm 100%.
Interested in the distinction is when it's not so cut and dry. I mean, just mistakes are mistakes, but when you have a 50-50 call, or you say it's 50-50, but really it should be 40-60, and you make the wrong one.
But I think the value here is just the value that he, thought about the life total, right?
Right.
For example, the greatest misplay I've ever seen in my life is Casey's. And I don't know if this story's ever been told in the podcast, but Casey is playing against... I don't even know. Casey is playing blue-white-red. Casey has two Celestial Call Knights in play. One of them has a -1/-1 counter on it. Casey's opponent is at 4, but Casey has him marked down at 5. Casey willy-nilly casts both Wall of Omens and Restoration Angel targeting his Wall of Omens, then activates the 3-3 Colonnade instead of the 4-4 Colonnade and attacks him. And then they go to a draw because it was the last turn of the game.
Oh, that's...
And it's crazy that Casey wouldn't just confirm life totals.
Sure. But I think that's the kind of thing that we can all relate to. I mean, everyone has made really dumb mistakes. And that's what's so frustrating about it sometimes, because you understand at a fundamental level, you should never draw a game of Magic where you have, or lose a game of Magic, heaven forbid, where you have lethal on board.
And they can't do anything about it. Yeah.
You just either attack a planeswalker instead, or you
attack with
the wrong man land, or tap your lands wrong, or accidentally. I had an opponent in a PPTQ in a very winning situation from 3 life fetch to thin out his deck and then cast an Abzan charm to kill himself.
Did that happen?
Yeah,
that
happened. He had the game almost locked up. All he had to do was attack. He had a Soulfire Grandmaster that was a 4-4, I think, already.
Wow.
Was going to gain him 4 life, and then he could have made that play if he wanted to. But he just, started thinking about something else and killed himself, not with lethal on board, but he was ahead in the game, certainly. So, I mean, we've all been there. We've all been there.
Yeah. This is just talking about that value that you have and just think about what you're doing. There's so much to go on, and so for me, it's an ever struggle for me to just look at my hand before I say yes to an opponent. And it can be hard. I don't spend mental energy thinking about their choices as much as I should. And it's something that I need to work on, because it really does impact the game. Like Michael said, he's had that same mistake. And I think that it's a relatable, Michael said, to a lot of players. And so how do we catch ourselves not thinking through these lines? Michael, what do we do when we realize that? I know that this week I had a play where I cast an Ulamog and didn't kill a Stasis Snare that had a Worldbreaker under it. Ooh. And rather killed a manland that didn't matter because I had an Ulamog in play, and then I also would have had a Worldbreaker in play.
Sure, so you could have killed it for free.
Yeah,
and gotten an extra 5/7.
Well, I wouldn't kill it for free because I wouldn't have cast the Worldbreaker.
Okay.
But it would have.
Sure, you'd rather
it
have
a
5/7
could right.
just block the manland.
Exactly.
Right.
So it's how do these things happen? How is that not something that I think about? How do I just kill two of his lands rather than killing the Stasis Snare?
For me, this generally happens when I get either tunnel visioned on a board or just too much autopiloting. So it can happen when I get tunnel vision or I kind of lose sight of what the actual goal of my play is, meaning I start thinking about some like sort of tangential decision too much. Like I was trying to activate Delirium. And I had a dead weight, and I needed a creature and an enchantment in my graveyard to and I was just going to win the game as soon as I did that. And I thought about it too much and decided the creature I would like to have left over was a 1-1 that could have died, would have made no difference, and I cast dead weight on a zombie token I had.
And this is the exact same thing for me. It's the exact same. It's this autopilot or tunnel vision look where, like, I'm tunnel vision because of something that's going on, because I'm focused on, like,
sure,
I'm going to win this game if I just cut them off of these lands.
Right. Like, you either misevaluate the board state in some fundamental way, right? Like you've kind of lost track of what's really happening in the game and what actually takes to get there.
Which is how those...
Or you just do what you always do, and what you always do is wrong.
Which, that tunnel vision thing is how those counterspell wars happen that we talked about earlier. Where, sure, like, you're just countering willy-nilly. It's like... Why are you counting this? Like, that's that tunnel vision we're talking about. I tease you on the show all the time. I mean, this is that foreshadowing we were talking about.
Yes.
I tease you all the time about those lands.
Because very much so.
You do it less, but you did it a lot.
Yes. Oh, I would assume at least once a night while I was playing.
Probably more.
Probably once a match. Let's be real.
Like, but like this mistapping is like something that I tease you about a lot. And it's not for a lack of love. It's actually just because I love you.
It's the same reason I call you Big Heezy.
Oh, yeah. Is that the reason? But what do you do? How are you combating that?
The fact that I'm aware of it is helping me combat it. Because
knowing is half the battle?
Exactly. If I didn't know I had a problem, how could I ever fix it? And, I mean, getting advice... you know, from other players, better players, on how to avoid those things, like Michael just told me. And it's hard for my pride to swallow because he's been playing Magic maybe like a quarter of the time that I have played, but is already a much better player. And that's one of those things you just have to accept, identify, and move on and take the benefits from that.
Michael doesn't believe he's good at Magic.
Oh, he's so good. He's so stupid. He's like the dumbest guy I know.
So good and so dumb.
Yeah. What a dummy.
So one thing... we're going to try and think, like, what's the one thing that we're each going to try and think about this week in Magic?
Winning states, taking it down.
No, but what are you going to think about in your matches of Magic?
Practice? Oh, during matches? Yeah. Playing tight, slowing it down, and just focusing, being entirely in the match. So,
like, looking at the board and, like, ignoring the guy drinking a Gatorade next to you?
Yep. Not caring about how my friends are doing, not worrying about if I made the correct... main deck decisions before the match. I want to be solely and completely focused on my match.
What about you, Michael? What are you going to think about in your matches of Magic this week?
When I'm playing Magic this week, I'm going to think about identifying what is going on in the match. Because I think when I make mistakes, it usually ties into the fact that I've fundamentally misidentified what is important. And when you do that, you open yourself up to making absolutely ridiculous misplays, not just brain fart type things, but where you just spend entire games or entire matches trying to pursue lines that don't even really make sense. So that some of that goes into preparation, understanding, but some of it goes into adapting during an event, seeing what your opponent is trying to do, understanding why you're winning or losing games, and adapting on the fly.
I'm gonna think about sequencing and lines available. So kind of combining the two that Michael and I talked about earlier. I think that there was some miss with sequencing as well as miss lines available for me last week. So I'm gonna that's my focus this week. And that's what I wanna do moving forward. I think what you can take away from this podcast is there's something you're doing wrong. Otherwise you'd be better at Magic. You'd be winning more.
Yeah. I mean, even the best players in the world make misplays, yeah, but get better all the time.
Look at it this way, right? I mean, if you were the best player in the world, you would be winning a lot.
Yeah. Right? Magic would be your job.
Yes. And you'd be great at it. You would be crushing it. So, yeah. You know, even for really good players, they're still frequently making mistakes, because most of being good at Magic is not about finding next level plays. It's about avoiding stupidity over and over and over again until your opponent finally does something dumb and you win because of it.
Yeah. I you know, think about what you're doing this week. Decide how you're going to improve, what you're going to think about, and make mental decisions instead of being on autopilot. You know, be on autopilot for the things that, like, you can be on autopilot for. But, like, if there's a moment where you have a fork in the road, like, think about the fork. Don't just go down one way because it's the way you usually go down. Make a decision. Because making decisions and thinking about the things are going to be important. Don't forget that you can join the clan on MTGO by messaging me at Spencer13Dev on MTGO. Don't forget to check out our sponsor, Oasis Games. You can check them out at mtgoasis.com. You can also support the show directly by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. There's also a run of t-shirts going on right now with the constructive criticism front and the hashtag always improving back at request of listeners. So hopefully those go through, but I'm going to be buying two for myself, and hopefully Michael buys one.
I've been meaning to do that to avoid wearing a gray t-shirt to every Magic tournament I ever attend.
But so check that out. It's going to be in the Facebook group. It's on my Twitter. It's on the Constructive Criticism Facebook page. Like, it's just Teespring Constructive Criticism Take 3. It's the third shirt that we've run. You know, check that out. Where can people find you, Manny?
Wait, also, backtrack a little bit. These shirts are really nice, guys. Like, they're so soft, and they fit so well. Like, I like these t-shirts just as t-shirts.
It's my actual favorite t-shirt. I want to buy three of them.
Yeah, they're super sweet. Yeah, I just thought I'd bring that up. Okay, where you can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Facebook. My name there is Manuel, M-A-N-U-E-L, last name Meraz, M-E-R-A-Z. You can also find me on the Facebook group. I love being on there. Again, that's like the only reason I'm on Facebook now. You can also find me on Twitter. My name there is RayManny_CCMTG.
Michael, where can people follow you on Twitter to get you some Twitter followers? Also, have you tweeted since the last time you were on the podcast?
No, the last time I tweeted was when I was on the podcast.
Have one tweet in history.
I have one tweet in history. Frankly, you can follow me if you really want to, but there probably won't be that much content.
But where can people tweet at you?
Oh, you can tweet to me. I'd be happy to tweet back. If you ask me a question on Twitter, I'd be happy to respond. You can find me on Twitter at MH1NDY, which is M Hindi, but with a one.
Where can people find you on Facebook?
You can find me on Facebook. You're also free to message me on Facebook or call me out in the group or whatever.
Chat with you on the telephone.
Don't. No, that would be weird. I mean, I would be concerned for a multitude of reasons. But
what's that? Is that a Lady Gaga song?
Oh, yeah, that is a Lady Gaga song.
All right.
You want me to sing it?
No, I don't.
I'll sing it. I'll belt it.
That's not what I want.
I love Lady Gaga.
You can find me on Facebook at Michael Hinderacher. That's H-I-N-D-E-R-A-K-E-R.
He's in the Constructive Criticism Facebook group. Just, you know, if you have a question, you'll just tag him there. You can find me on Twitter at Spencer13H. You can find the podcast at CCMTG. You can find the podcast every week on ConstructiveCriticism.com. And mtgcast.com. And that's it right now.
You can also find a lot of our content on YouTube now, too.
You can all of it on YouTube, actually.
Yeah, it's
just subscribe to Constructive Criticism on YouTube, and you'll find all of that content. Yeah, you can also join the Constructive Criticism Facebook group. I am there every day.
I think pretty much all of us are. Like, if you tag any of us in a post, we'll get back to you.
Yeah.
Within honestly minutes. Embarrassingly no, quickly.
Yeah. I have been worse at it. I will get better. A lot of us will, but I've been bad.
Sometimes embarrassed at my response time, so.
Yeah. I will see, like, this was posted 24 seconds ago, and I'm like, money.
Oh, see, I see that, and I'm like, all right, I gotta wait.
So, I was gonna get rid of shoutouts.
No.
I legitimately was like, all right, these aren't great. They're not great for the show. So today, they came into the meeting before the show, and I just highlighted it and deleted. And Manny, who literally never has a shout-out, was like, you can't delete that. And I was like, why? You and Casey hate them. And he's like, yeah, but now that they're gone, I need them.
It's fact. I mean, I need an outlet. I need to be able to talk to the listeners.
So who's your shout-out to?
So it's Frank K and everyone else who helped out with the black-red mid-range deck on the Facebook group. Thank you guys so much for your input. I love listening to you and bouncing your ideas off me. You know, love them or hate them, I really appreciate it.
Michael, shout outs.
I'm going to shout out Austin.
That's against the rules.
Yeah.
Why is that against
the rules? I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Okay.
It's not Matt Kling. You can say anything you want about anybody but Matt Kling.
Okay. I may shout out Matt Kling in the future. I reserve
no,
that right.
No. Nope.
You can't. I'm going to shout out Austin for helping me with the Bant Company mirror match, helping me construct a sideboard. And I'm going to also shout out Mike Callahan for helping me with the same thing.
Oh, Mike Callahan is great.
Really nice guy.
Yeah. Mike Callahan is great. shout out to PV. Honestly, like, having someone that I'm just actually a huge fan of, I might be the biggest PV fan in the world. Like, I don't know how many people are, like, fans of Magic players, but I legitimately, like, root for PV at every event. And part of that is just his interaction with me. Guy has just always been there for me. Like, if I need help with content or anything, like, he is there to, like, legitimately, like, help me create that content and just there for any advice that I need. And that is a lot for, like, someone with his pedigree. He's, like, one of the best three Magic players in the world.
I mean, he's ranked number two.
And he has, you know, 10 Pro Tour top eights. And he still makes time that when I ask him a question, like, Spencer, I will answer your question.
Yeah, I mean,
and, like, he literally sees me at events and, like, makes time to, like, come and talk to me and, like...
That's way cool.
It's just amazing. I could not be a bigger fan of Paulo than I am. And he gets such a bad rap for being so direct on Twitter. And, like, he's just the greatest guy.
Yeah. That's the whole point of Twitter, right? That you get to be direct. That if you ask someone a question, they respond directly.
Yeah.
Right?
So, hashtag would that be good. Hashtag would that be good is our Twitter outreach program. You can tweet anything you want with the hashtag would that be good, and we will answer it on the podcast or just on Twitter if we, like, really like what you tweeted. So, let's go to that be good. So the last one that we have, look, we don't even have that many. I think it's just these three, right? Yeah, so we have me, I tweeted deck tech on blue white human or white blue humans, hashtag MTG, hashtag would that be good, hashtag standard. Check out the YouTube channel. It's got content, deck techs every week. Content matches every week. Wednesday Night Warriors, a video blog that I do, you know, semi-regularly. Check it out.
Yeah, if you like watching Magic as much as you like listening to us talk about it, probably more, you will love it. You will have so much stuff to watch.
Spencer13H, Starcut Unbroken, in new standard, hashtag with the be good. And then it's a Talk to Me Obama thing where he says red, blue, and green, or rug, as the kids say it, has always been a superior color combination in Magic the Gathering. So if you want to watch Obama say that.
You can do that?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my life has changed.
I think I'm going to post all my deck lists
in Obama's voice.
Man, it's going to be, Magic is going to be so much
I'm going to send my resumes.
I might make a soundboard and just bring it with me to tournaments.
You just have like Obama saying go
to my opponent.
In Obama.
Upkeep response.
Yeah.
Life is great.
A response. So I do actually have I have multiple Sarkhan decks. So if you ever just want Sarkhan deck lists, just message me and I'll send you like what I've been playing on Cockatrice, because about 30% of my Cockatrice time is spent playing Sarkhan Unbroken.
Yeah, that's your pet card, I think, for this last year.
That card's been out longer than a year.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever.
Don't know where I'm going to start, but four
Cryptolith
rights. Don't know where I'm going, but I'm starting with four Cryptolith rights and four Secure the Wastes. Hashtag, would that be good?
Man, Scotty's got some stuff.
Yeah, Scotty's a wild man. I like it. He's all over the place.
Scotty, you keep doing you. If for some reason your Secure the Wastes are casting bigger Secure the Wastes.
That's so cool.
That's just great.
That's so sweet.
It's depressing to me that the best thing I can think to do with Secure the Wastes and Cryptolith Rites is untap and cast another Secure the Wastes. But
that sounds so good, that though. That's
great, yeah. Secure for like 12?
You don't even have to untap and do it. You can untap, say, go, and they'll be like, what is happening to me? And then, like,
I think they'll figure it out pretty quickly when you untap and say go after attacking with none of your 1/1s.
Well, they could be bigger than 1/1s.
Well, I have to wonder if it's not just better to attack generally.
But
you're missing the point here.
You don't understand capitalism, bro. More is better.
Yeah. What's better than, you know, 5/1/1s?
12/1/1s.
Dead is better, always. I think we've established
I think we did. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see y'all next week. Bye, guys.
See ya.
Magic.